Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Hey, it looks like you like to get up early, so Monday through Friday, listen to me from 5:30 to 9, Mike Ferguson here, and you are listening to The Randy Tobler Show right here on News Talk STL.
Well, welcome back to the third hour of the program. Thanks for being here. We're going to be talking with Mike Bost at 8:25. He's the incumbent in Illinois' 12th Congressional District, Navy SEAL, and I think he has the endorsement of Donald Trump, so we'll have to talk with him about how that race is going. We heard from his opponent, Darren Bailey. Both have served in the Illinois legislature in the past. Talked with Mr. Bailey last hour. So for any of your friends who would want to hear this, or if you haven't heard, maybe you weren't able to listen last hour, make sure you check out the podcast that Jerome will have up a little bit later today. Right, Jerome?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Jerome's a refugee from the People's Republic of Illinois himself. I mean, doesn't it feel good to have a little freedom here in Missouri? I mean, doesn't it feel like a sort of a renaissance for you, a rebirth?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I was not prepared for the culture shock of coming down here. You know, people are a lot nicer overall. People actually seem to care about each other down here. You can actually exercise your rights, which is a big one for me. And I feel bad for all my friends and family back home.
Yeah, I know. And last week I had so many comments, Jerome, about your powerful testimony as to the power of the people in your life that can, in a tough area like you grew up, how that can make such a difference. Those folks can make such a difference when you're coming to those decision points in your life, whether to, you know, whether to turn down a different path or, you know, an alternate path that may be better off if you choose the alternate path and not the one that your friends are choosing. It was a very powerful testimony, and I hope that folks would maybe check it out if they didn't get a chance to listen last week. It was very good.
Yeah, I was reflecting on that as well. When I was listening back to it, there were certain points where I kind of touched on a topic and then I was just kind of moving on. But I found out there's a term, it's called Ubuntu, and that basically means I am because we are. And I think that's a very powerful statement about the impact that a community can have, not just the community you grow up in, but, you know, culture starts at home. And then from there, it's finding people that can be those positive influences. And I think that if everybody, you know, I do a lot of volunteer work still. I'm actually, after the show, going to be playing the Easter Bunny for a cat adoption event today. So that'll be fun. I'm very allergic to cats, but I'll have the allergy meds. But I think that if everybody spent a little time, you know, being that influence, you know, you can really make a positive influence on somebody like myself that was an at-risk youth and put him on the right path to becoming a News Talk St. Louis and Dr. Randy Tobler Show listener, you know?
Hey, well, let me ask you about that. What, for those of us who no doubt some of us grew up in privileged homes, and I don't mean privileged in the way the progressives like to demonize it and make it sound like something that's unworthy or you know, people shouldn't experience because I didn't experience privilege, so you don't get to experience, you know, the sort of zero-sum game. But for folks who grew up in a traditional nuclear family in a neighborhood that was safe and sound, and you could go out and take a walk or play in the park or play with your buddies without having bullets, you know, zipping by your ear. And for those who then lived in those neighborhoods that were not that way, like the neighborhood you lived in, I think sometimes when we've grown up in a very blessed atmosphere and had a pretty blessed trajectory in life as a result, and we want to help and bring those kinds of values and virtues and, I guess, rules and regs of the road for success, for lack of a better term, to those who maybe weren't exposed to those and haven't been taught those. There's ways to communicate that to people that don't have that reference point, and there's ways not to. Because it can turn people off and it can feel judgmental and condescending. And you know what I mean? I mean, I think we go through that as parents with our children naturally. Like, it's like, please, would you, I've been there and done that, or know someone who has done that. Please don't go that direction. And if you're too authoritarian and if you're too over the top about it, often kids will push back and go the opposite way. So what are some of the the techniques, whether someone out there might want to be a big brother, big sister, a foster parent, or maybe just a parent taking care of a kid in a culture that's not the same culture I grew up. What are some of the techniques and methods that can communicate those values best?
So a big thing, as an adult, I've tried to learn more about how to understand conceptually what's going on. So the first thing I would say is, obviously, if you grew up in a very stable, nice, loving environment, you know, I don't like the negativity that comes with the idea of privilege. You know, just be thankful that you had that luxury and that your parents and your grandparents and so on and so forth kind of figured it out to pass it on to you. There's nothing to feel bad about. But I think it's recognizing that a lot of us people that grew up in this environment, be it the gangsters, the drug addicts, the victims, a lot of us are angry. A lot of young people are very angry, and anger comes from grief most times. So there are the very vocal people that want to punish you because you had a better life than they did. I've never looked at somebody that had a great life and sat there and wanted to destroy that for them. But a lot of the reason why I was such a knucklehead growing up, and it was very difficult for a lot of people to reach through to me, was because I was so focused on the pain and the anger of being in an environment I didn't choose to be in and having to put up with it, and almost like a self-pity. So the first thing I would say is to learn to understand that, you know, learn that if somebody is in a bad mood, if somebody is not listening, they're rebellious, oppositional defiant disorder, whatever you want to call it, is that they're probably dealing with some internalized grief or some internalized anger that they don't know how to express otherwise. And that's just their way of, like, that biologically, that's just the emotions that they're going through. And people don't act logically when they're going through a lot of that stuff. Yeah, big brother, big sister groups, homeless shelters, any kind of program that allows you to volunteer, they will oftentimes help you get the resources you need to be a more, I wouldn't say more compassionate. A lot of people are compassionate, but they don't know how to give compassion in the way that the those that are struggling might need. So a thing too is, you know, tough love is still love. And that's part of what I was trying to say last time, you know, about coaching even, is a lot of people don't understand when we're going through this that tough love is still love. It may not be what we want to hear, but it may be the thing that we need to snap out of the situation we're in.
Yeah.
But going about giving that tough love, you know, if we don't feel like you're judging us, if we don't feel like you think you're better than us, or if we're not, you know, feeling like we're being punished because of the people, and that's with my church, you know, story. There are people in my church that, because of the way, you know, single motherhood is not very accepted in a lot of religious communities, and, you know, certain vices and certain attitudes are not very well received, but learning to have that little bit of extra patience and looking for opportunities to say, this is an angry young man. Now, I'm not saying if a guy is toting a gun and he's blasting music and he's doing all kinds of, you know, intimidating things, you don't walk up to him and give him a hug, but there are definitely people out there that they just don't have the resources to get into an anger management program or a rehab program. And sometimes allowing them to feel like they can fail in a productive way, and a lot of times allowing them to feel like they're hurt if they're rampaging and ranting and raving, they're not being violent, but they're just overwhelmed with emotion, being the ear for them or the shoulder for them to cry on, can really, maybe not in that moment, but later that day or later that week, they may reflect on that, and that will may put them, give them just enough strength to put them on the right path to want to better themselves and to realize that life is more than doing drugs or gambling or stealing or whatever. And I've seen people that they were in jail several times. You know, they were not very good people, but after finding just the right person to talk to and the right person to look up to as an influence, they started getting their life together. And some of them have their own businesses doing landscaping work or construction work. And it's truly, and those are the moments that I realize in my life that reflect on that. That's what I want to do. I don't want to be the person that always made an excuse and talked about how bad my life was, how sad I was, how it wasn't fair to me. I want to be the person that says, wow, look at where I came from and look at where I'm at now.
Well, it's interesting that you'd say that, because I was relating to my audience on my weekday show the other day, something that I ran across on Jason Whitlock. You know, Jason Whitlock is quite a communicator. He's a Christian man. He wears it on his sleeve, but he's a big sports guy. I forget what his outlet is. He on Outkick or whatever. He's a big, you know, guy on Twitter and stuff. Takes a lot of heat for being an Uncle Tom, because he calls out the dysfunction in the African-American community that then leads to the acting out. And yours was probably a mixed community, right? And this is not really a white or black thing. I think this is a poverty and a cultural thing, right?
Absolutely.
Where there's there's fragmented families, and that leads, I think, ultimately to the other problems. At any rate, he was talking about the tragedy at Hazelwood East High School where that child's head was just mercilessly beaten into the concrete. I was so struck by that. It haunts me.
Mm-hmm.
I once attended to a young man who at a high school basketball game went up for a layup and he slipped and his head hit the ground like a pumpkin. And he had a seizure because of the head trauma. And when I watched this video, this young lady was having a seizure near the end of the video because of the merciless beating she was taking. It just really, it horrified me beyond belief. Jason says he wanted to share some additional thoughts about that tragedy where a child's head was beaten into the concrete. He says, many are wondering what produced the rage inside the other child. What did the why did the fight escalate to such a barbaric level? Victimhood produces rage and animus. It's a cancer of the mind. Modern American culture preaches and rewards the victimhood mentality. It's a lucrative and effective tool to seize power. It's antithetical to Christ's life and the tenets of Christian faith. Choosing Christ is choosing victory. We can achieve all things through Christ who strengthens us. He says, we no longer teach that as a society. We teach victimhood and grievance. It's like you were talking about. Our young people are more callous and savage than previously because we've convinced them they're all victims of sexism, racism, homophobia, Islamophobia, fat shaming, transphobia, poverty, pronoun injustice, you name it. They're all owed a debt. Unpaid debts foment anger. And then he goes on to say he was poor. He and his father shared a 400 square foot, one bedroom apartment in 84, 85. He was captain of his high school football team, blah, blah, blah. He says poverty does not produce rage, a victim mentality, a lack of hope, the belief that the world owes you a debt, and the absence of parental love produce an endless supply of rage. That really resonates with me because you had love at the right time, at the right place, and the right people, right? Not everyone grows up in a, you know, Ozzie and Harriet world, but there we have to celebrate and somehow get the people who will do the proper messaging with tough love, a lot of grace, but a lot of accountability, and expose people to what fulfillment of achievement feels like. That seems to be the key. When people achieve something, even if it's a baby step, and they achieve the fulfillment of not being given something, but earning it. That seems to be, to me, that's what made my life, you know, in the early days, right? I went to work for someone sweeping the floors at the music store and then selling a clarinet reed and pretty soon teaching someone and hold, you know, being accountable for the behavior. That's, and my dad, working next to my dad on the bandstand. Man, if I screwed up, he let me know about it. We got to go to the basement and practice a little more.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just thought it was really telling that here's a guy that had sounds like a similar upbringing to yours and how victimhood is not the way, but that's the way the poverty pimps like to push it onto people, right? Because there's an industry about that. Gang leaders, I guess that's what they do too, right?
Yeah, and that's what I've noticed with my time. Like I said, I was never actually in a gang, but I was associated with people that actually were in gangs because, you know, when you only have so many people in your environment to choose from, you choose whoever's going to be the nicest to you. And sometimes they would want stuff out of me and, you know, but that's kind of how gang mentality works. And what we see, especially with the young lady that was brutally beating the teenager's head into the pavement, it's easy to destroy. It's easy, and that gives you a sense of some sort of control over your life. But the positive element of that, or the positive opposite of that would be to create something, and that's much harder. So when it comes to gang or mob mentality or us versus them, any it's all the same philosophy as far as I'm concerned. It's that we are powerful together. We all have something in common, be it poverty, be it we want easy money through robbing people or selling drugs, be it we have similar religious beliefs, similar you know, racial beliefs, whatever the case is, you know, we're all going to get together. We're going to make you stronger. You're going to do this for us. We're going to have your back. And that's, again, if you have a strong community that's more positive than that, you're less likely to go and join a gang because you'll have that community. You'll have your own culture that you've mm-hmm. developed. And mm-hmm. that's unfortunately what I think we're seeing a lot of today is people not having that. You go to school and there's really not very much socialization because of, you know, anti-social media almost. It makes you more antisocial. Yeah. So people are finding these echo chambers online and you convince somebody that they've been wronged by society, the victim mentality. You give it a label, so now it justifies every negative thing that you feel. You know, am I miserable because I'm depressed? Am I miserable because I've got anger issues? No, I'm miserable because, you know, legacy this, you know, legacy racism, legacy sexism, you know. And then once you start to be able to justify that through politically correct terms, then it's just going to amplify your anger. You're going to find more ways to become a victim. You're going to find more ways to be destructive because you want to destroy the thing that is making you feel this way rather than saying, I'm going to build up myself. If I feel like I'm a victim, I want to build up people like me. I want to go out and help the homeless people. I want to go out and help the drug addicts and the alcoholics and the people that, you know, had no parents, no guidance at home. I want to help those people and build them up, but it's a lot easier to take out your anger on people that are weaker than you or that are scared of you and to intimidate people. And I think that that's the mentality that needs to change. And you're not going to get that from listening only to politicians or only to your teachers. You need to find ways to find commonalities with people and learn to let go of the anger in a positive way rather than a negative way.
Yep. And there's no doubt. Look, now to circle back to some practical policy, and we're going to talk with Congressman Mike Bost from CD12 in Illinois here in just a minute. But this is why school choice is so critically important. Jason Whitlock in that piece on Twitter goes on to say our schools are teaching this revisionist history where any sin that went on in the past is unforgivable, that nothing that went on was good, that we built nothing. No, we built the greatest society in the world that has changed, by the way, other billions of people's lives in other parts of the world. And yes, were there mistakes? But is the answer reparations and vengeance? No. No, that's not the case. When we come back, we'll be talking with Congressman Mike Bost, who's in a race, primary race, just coming up next week against Aaron Bailey, who we talked to earlier. So we'll see what Congressman Bost has to say about that race in just a few minutes as we roll along on the Tobler Show.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to the program. Pleasure to talk with Congressman Mike Bost, serving Illinois' 12th Congressional District in a primary race against Mr. Bailey, who you heard from Darren Bailey last hour. We're featuring this race. It's a large swath of Illinois. Welcome to the program, Congressman.
Good morning, Randy. Thanks for having me on.
So you're a Navy SEAL, I understand. Pretty good credentials there. You've faced a little hardship in your life.
I'm actually the closest thing to a Navy SEAL. I'm a Marine.
Oh, you're a Marine. I thought you were a Navy SEAL.
I'm a Marine.
Well, that's pretty darn close. Hey, so tell me a little bit about the differentials between you and Mr. Bailey. I mean, he's challenging you. Right. You came in sure. In 15. Earlier, he said that you've voted for tax increases. You said you're going to bring home the bacon.
Wow. Then we talked a little bit about that. Yeah, he's changed his tunes. He's talking to you. Every time he turns around, he's grabbing for another straw. So let me tell you what's really going on. I am a conservative Republican, a governing conservative Republican. Every time he's reached out and said, oh, I'm not this. Or earlier he said, early on, he said, I'm not pro-life, but I've got 100% rating with the pro-life and I'm endorsed by pro-life. I'm not strong enough on the Second Amendment yet. I have got the endorsement from the NRA and 100% rating with them. All the family groups, I've got 100% rating with them. Worked Donald Trump. I was the first full committee chairman nationally to endorse Donald Trump. I endorsed him President's Day a year ago. And then I've got Donald Trump's endorsement. So he's kind of grabbing straws. I've been a conservative fighter and will continue to be a conservative fighter, well known and respected to do that. With this district, the most important thing is that you represent the people. Being a governing conservative, what does that mean? It means that you are willing to hold the conservative line, but yet understand that when we're in the majority, we must govern We must keep the majority to save the nation. We must work to make sure we need to quit fighting against Republicans and start fighting against the Democrats so that we can actually gain ground in the House, gain ground in the Senate, take the Senate and bring Trump back into office so that we can actually save the nation. So voted all, you know, I mean, we've worked hard on making sure House Bill 2 is passed. But besides that, the committees that I'm on Ag, Veterans Affairs, and I'm chairman of the VA committee. Now, the last time there was a chairman located in the state of Illinois, south of Springfield, Illinois, was 42 years ago, and obviously it wasn't a Republican at that time. That's an advantage for the Illinois district, the 12th district, because when you're dealing with the VA issues, you're dealing with every other member of Congress because they all have veterans that need help and need concerns. So I'm going to continue to work. We've done a great job on our campaign. We've got endorsed by over 200 local elected officials in the counties, got endorsed by Jim Jordan, Max Miller. The list goes on and on of endorsements of good conservatives throughout the nation. So we're happy where we're at right now. And right now here in the last few days, he's grabbing at every straw possible, because what you just brought up, he's actually never brought those things up before. He's always attacked on those other issues I was talking about.
All right, that's Congressman Mike Bost from Illinois' 12th Congressional District. You know, I heard someone the other day said echo something I've said before, Congressman, and that is that, you know, the Republican Party, the modern Republican Party, seems to just be the party that does big government better than the Democrats. You know, it's not really a party of small government, limited government anymore, that constitutional conservative party. And even Donald Trump is a populist. He's not going to touch Medicare. He's not going to touch Social Security. Where do you stand on some of those things? A lot of Republicans like to talk about discretionary funding, but that's not going to make the difference. That's not going to balance the budget. No. Where do you think we need to go?
Here's what's got to be done. One, if you would look at what was happening to our economy, how the GDP was growing prior to COVID, that was the ideas and the policies of the Trump administration. We need to re-implement that, get the engine fired back up so the GDP climbs. At the same time, we need to control our spending, but also remember there are certain things under the Constitution that we must do. We must secure the border, which is not being done. We must provide for a national defense. Now, those things do cost money. But the thing is, where we have to work is what you just talked about, that discretionary, that non-discretionary spending. Now, how do we deal with that? We have to sit down and look at a long-term plan. Now, that does not mean, I want to explain that to your listeners so you're not, no one comes back and says, oh, well, the Republicans want to do that, want to cut. We don't want to cut Social Security and Medicare. We want to put them in place in a way that our children and grandchildren will have them, and we will not spend our debt so far out of that we can't replace it. We need to make sure, and that's another thing that we're doing to deal with that debt, is the fact that we have to watch China, because China will own our debt. And right now, the China Task Force has come up with a whole lot of plans, which we implemented the other day, some of them, and that is we need to make sure that they don't have the ability to spy on us through platforms that are owned by the Chinese Communist Party. So there, we've got to be, that's why I was talking about a governing conservative. We understand that we must face debt, but we've got to do it wisely, and we've got to bring it down. And we can do that by increasing the GDP and controlling our spending in areas that are not the... we need to do the long-term fix for those things that are mandatory spending as well, because we can't cure it on just dealing with non-mandatory spending.
Well, you know, let's face the reality. I mean, I tell my adult children, what do you think about a program named Social Security, a program named Medicare that you're forced to participate in? And I just turned Medicare age, and you won't believe what I'm spending on Medicare premiums, Congressman, and I'm forced to take Medicare, whereas I would rather have a direct primary care relationship with my doctor and have a wraparound health care sharing plan, maybe a Christian-based health. I can't do that because it forced. So what kind of a plan is it that is so good for you that you're forced to do? You know what I mean? I just, it seems
I understand your argument, and that can be left up for discussion. But the reality is the nation is where it is, and as we push forward, until those ideas come forward and can actually get the 236 votes or 216 votes to move through the House, and remember, they take 60 votes in the Senate, not just 50 votes, and then have a president that will sign it. And the thing is, we can argue from your point of view, and I may in time or certain times argue from your point of view, but sometimes just arguing and voting no is not the way to govern. You have to actually implement those ideas, sell those ideas, work across not only the aisle, but across with your own party, because there's many Republicans, yeah, as you said, would not go that far to walk away from those programs. So, I mean, yeah, it's great to have a philosophy, but the implementation of that is a reality is we're a representative form of government. And the and though may you have that argument, the question is, how do you get the majority of them to agree with you to shift over to some other program other than the one that has been
best thing to do is they should listen to the show more often. Have your fellow congressmen and women do that.
There you go.
Be better. No, so look, I'm thankful that you approach it in a pragmatic standpoint. And I think what I heard you say is, look, at some point we do have to have a rational discussion about how to extend this program so it's there for people. And it's going to take some courage. This. It's going to take courage.
And remember this, Randy, you can have a rational discussion, but you can guarantee you that our Democrat opponents simply scream, "Oh, they want to cut it," and that's not the case at all. Matter of fact, one of the persons that had one of the best plans to fix it several years ago was Paul Ryan. But if you remember, all of a sudden the AARP and other groups like that created an ad that shows somebody looked like Paul Ryan pushing a little old lady off the cliff on a wheelchair, pushing grandma off the cliff. Remember?
Right.
Because they can do that in a 15-second soundbite, and the conversation that really needs to be had is a serious conversation over a long time that we can explain to the American people.
We're talking with Congressman Mike Boss, who's in a primary battle, and I guess that vote's next week, right, Congressman?
It is. It's Tuesday, and we're asking people to get out, and in Illinois, we're early voting has already started. Now, if we're from Southern Illinois, we say please vote early. In Northern Illinois, they say vote early, vote often. We'll just say vote early if you want to vote early. If not, it's on the 19th.
And what is your campaign website, sir?
BossForCongress.com.
All right. I noticed that you voted yes on the TikTok divestiture bill the other day.
Yes, I did.
People are telling me that a lot of young people who are conservatives but are on TikTok and they're concerned about it. I don't know if they're fully aware of the national security interest. I think my friends, at least, are aware of the potential psychological damage. I think some people manage the influence well and others don't. But let me ask you this. Do you think that a lot of them are telling me that young people who are going to be an increasingly influential piece of this vote coming up in November, they're putting the blame and putting the tail on the donkey of the Republicans for the ones that are restricting their First Amendment rights when it comes to this? How do you respond to that?
I respond to that out of committee, it was unanimous. Unanimous. You don't hardly get that out of committee. And it was still a very, very, very large group that supported it and did not vote no. And the reason that is because we have been informed as members of Congress of certain things that have come to light. And if you and I think it's sad that a lot of people are saying right now that, oh, well, they're banning TikTok. That's not what the bill did. That's not what the bill did. It could in time. But what the bill does is, American or non-CCP interests should buy the platform, and the CCP the controlling interest of TikTok should make sure that it is diversified, sold into a more controlling state, so that we can not all of a sudden be. Remember this about Communist Party of China: they're imperialist. Not only communists, they're imperialists. They play for the long game. They are our most dangerous enemy, and their way of getting and stealing a lot of our technology and keeping intel into we, the United States, is through the platform that they control. So whether it is actually coming after us with weapons, whether it is actually buying up our property, whether it is buying up our corporations, we have to keep an eye on this if we want to save the nation. And I hope
people
are wise enough to understand that.
What we've heard is that you, as a member of Congress, heard some briefing that was very chilling. And, you know, if you told us, you'd have to kill us, that kind of stuff, right? It's top secret. So that's okay.
There are things we know. And I'm going to tell you something about Congress that does bother me. And I'm afraid that my opponent would be this. If you, quite often you're asked to go to what's known as a SCIF, and you're given certain information. Certain members of Congress choose not to go to the SCIF because it would ruin their narrative on their social media. And if they would really listen to what we're trying to do. You know what that's called? Governing as a conservative.
Yep. Okay. I hear you. Yep. All right. Anything else that you'd like to say before we end our conversation? I know you got a lot of campaigning to do between now and Tuesday.
We do. But let me say this. Regardless of how this election turns out, be blessed in the fact that you still live in the greatest nation in the world. We just got to make sure we keep it that way.
All right. Congressman Mike Boss, we thank you for being with us. All the best to you in the upcoming primary.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you for having me on.
All right. There he is. Well, endorsed by Donald Trump. And in possession of some information that if we trust our governing leaders is dangerous, coming from TikTok. I wonder if the young people do listen to the kind of comments that you just heard. You got to wonder. I mean, when this came from both Republicans and Democrats, after they had briefings concerning what TikTok is doing and the kind of information they're gathering, every keystroke, and even I understand the front-facing camera is being used when you're not on TikTok. It's a powerful, powerful, addictive medium. If we have people that either don't want to hear that information or are so addicted that, you know, they'll hurt themselves if they lose access to TikTok, that, I think, defines an addiction, doesn't it? But so does Facebook and Instagram and all the other platforms. So I guess we're all accustomed to that now. Hey, let's take some calls as we wrap it up. Your thoughts on TikTok, Robert Hur's special counsel testimony, the Fannie Willis incident. We talked about that. Tons to talk about. You're invited to the table. 314-912-1019. Give me a call. We'll be right back.
We need to control our spending, but also remember there are certain things under the Constitution that we must do. We must secure the border. We must provide for a national defense. We have to watch China because China will own our debt.
Any way you want it, it's the way you need it. Any way you want it.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Good morning, everybody. Tony Colombo and Katie Fitzpatrick here.
Thanks for listening to the Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL. And don't forget to join us every weekday at 2 p.m. for Colombo and Katie.
Also, keep it here for my Saturday morning show, the Bluff City Outdoor Show, today at 11. Now, back to Dr. Randy Tobler. Love you, Doc.
Oh, man, I love my hits with Katie and Tony and all the shows during the week. It's so much fun. I'll be listening to the Bluff City Outdoor Show. Don't worry. And you'll want to listen to Bob and Eric on the Stiefel Money Show later up on the money, because that's going to be important. Some consumer confidence flagging in the last report. I think we have not seen the end of this economic cycle yet. That's my amateur economist viewpoint. We'll see if Bob and Eric agree on that or not. We have a caller on the line, 314-912-1019. Caller, go ahead. You're on the Tobler Show.
Hi, good morning, Dr. Tobler.
Good morning.
Well, I'm a Congressman Boss fan. Okay, let me say that at the outset. However, I was really frustrated with that interview. And the reason is because he, like other politicians, get on media and speak in generalities about these massive issues we face. And it's the time for generalities and, frankly, pablum is way past us. We need specific answers to these big, hairy questions. And I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about. So over a year ago, the Cato Institute published a paper called Social Security Benefits Are Growing Too Fast. And in that paper, they discuss the inflation factors that are used to grow Social Security benefits over time. So in other words, the CPI adjustment, if you will, that's that's attached to Social Security. Currently, and since 1972, the factor that is used is the CPIW wage growth index. In other words, Social Security benefits are indexed at the rate of wage growth. However, the argument is that they instead should be indexed at the rate of price growth, the growth of prices of things we buy at the grocery store, right? And which is
the CPIU, correct?
Correct. And it is slightly lower. When I say slightly, it is 0.7% lower than the long-term rate of CPIW. But as any mathematician will tell you, a small adjustment over a long period of time can make a big difference. And in this case, if we were to index the growth and change nothing about current benefits, zero, nobody takes a haircut, there is no reduction in benefits, there's no increase in the age at which Social Security is attainable. Okay, so the eligibility requirements stay the same. Everything stays the same. But instead of indexing at the rate of wage growth, we index at the rate of price growth. That simple change will eliminate 88.0% of the Social Security deficit over the next 75 years, which is the time period for which the society, the Social Security actuaries project the cost of the program. So I'm going to translate that. My kids who are in their 20s would actually get a meaningful Social Security benefit when they're in their 60s. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it's that one change. And if you think about it, now, you know, realistically, are we talking about reducing my benefit, say, in 10 years? I'm 61. Yes, we're talking about a slight reduction in my benefit. But we're also talking about preservation of the program. And right. given the alternatives, this is the kind of thing that Congressman Bost and his colleagues need to be coming to the American people with. Look, I didn't just throw something out that was completely I could have that conversation with any American citizen and they would understand generally what I was talking about, right? Particularly if I showed them illustrations. This is not.
Yeah, except, you know the problem? I agree with you. And the problem is, I think Congressman Bost and probably even those on the other side of the aisle would probably in private have that discussion. But you let that get into the media and it's like, oh, caller is trying to cut Social Security benefits.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I know.
But that's why I appreciate this show and your call, because it's a small change that has a huge impact on the macro level. You're right.
Well, look, it's time for a candid conversation, and this is an issue that we've been discussing for two decades minimum now. I think if laid out rationally to the public by somebody who can actually communicate well, which eliminates 80% of the Republican Party, we could actually get momentum behind it and overcome the media bias. You're absolutely right, would vilify somebody who proposed what I just laid out.
Yeah.
But honestly, right.
Hey, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. That. Yeah. Right. You know, I have some optimism, caller. You know, we lament the fact that it's very difficult these days in the age of short attention spans and social media. And I think we're all probably susceptible to that and, you know, influence. But I think especially the generation that's going to take over and is going to make the difference in voting. I'm hoping that as the mainstream legacy media is dissolving, we see that Washington Post, LA Times, you know, New York Times, we see viewership on cable networks, including Fox, is staggering, going down. So hopefully with alternative media, people that will maybe take the time to listen to outlets like this, like other conservative outlets, the Cato Institute and others, perhaps a little bit of the truth will seep through rather than the manipulated and agenda-driven bilge that people have been consuming from legacy media. I hope so. Thanks for your call. Thanks for pointing it out. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Doctor.
All right. So that's interesting. See, there you go. This is the smartest audience in the land. And I thank you for bringing your comments in. And whether it's on our news feed, our video feeds, or through calls, we appreciate it. And we'll be back next week to cover the events of the week and breaking things, as well as some of our, you know, lofty philosophical discussions. Because even though Congressman Bost didn't want to talk philosophy and ideology, it was a world-changing philosophy and ideology that resulted in the greatest country this planet's ever seen. So let's never forget that kind of a discussion. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a great weekend. We'll see you.